Well, good morning. Hey, I am so glad that you guys are here this morning. And whether this morning is your very first time here, or maybe you're back for the 100th time, or maybe this morning you're just checking us out online, I want you guys to know how incredibly privileged I am and we are here at CORE to have you. And I hope that as we sort of dive in this morning, I hope that now we're, what, 5 or so days removed from it, I hope that all of you guys had an incredible opportunity to spend time with the people closest to you on Valentine's Day. You see, we're going through this series about relationships because this is the month of love, and this month is all about relationships. And the reality is that a lot of times, at least from my perspective, Valentine's Day is sort of that one day out of the year, like aside from having to buy a present or whatever it is, aside from all of that stuff, Valentine's Day is the one day of the year, or one of a few days out of the year, where our relationships actually seem to get a little simpler, don't they? Like, love is in the air, and we get along with our spouse on that day, and we know we're supposed to treat each other nicely, and so our relationships are just a little bit less complicated on that day. We take each other out to eat, and we enjoy one another's company, and that's one of the days out of the year where we can just sit and relax and feel like, well, life doesn't have any difficult people with it. But here we sit, 5 days removed from Valentine's Day, and reality comes smacking you back in the face. And you spent a couple days at work after Valentine's Day, or you spent a couple of days at home with your kids, or whatever it is for you, and you quickly realize, oh yeah, the nostalgia of Valentine's Day has officially worn off, and we are back to this conundrum that we all live with. This conundrum that leads us to why we're doing a series like this, and that is because people are different. And the people you sit next to in the office, maybe the person sitting next to you right now, opposites attract. People are different. And because people are different, people are difficult in our lives, and we find it difficult to interact with them and to get along with them. And so throughout this series, we want to help each and every one of us deal with difficult people. Maybe the difficult people in your life, and maybe it's going to help people deal with you because you might be a difficult person to someone else. Like Rob said this morning, we are in part 3 of this series. And the reality is what I'm willing to bet is that for a lot of you, when you heard the title of this morning's message, whether that was in closing comments last week, whether that was on social media through Facebook, or whether you just picked up your weekly for the very first time and you pulled out the notes page and you read it at the top of the page, a lot of you, when you heard a title about hypocritical people, I would venture to guess that there are a lot of mixed emotions happening in the room. Maybe for some of you, you're sitting there and you are incredibly nervous right now about what's about to come out of this guy's mouth that's standing on the stage. Because you know that from your life experience, confrontation and talking about hypocritical people and all that goes with that, that makes you uncomfortable and it makes you nervous and you don't like going there. And this morning, I have good news for you. No, this morning's message isn't going to be easy. That's not the good news I have for you. The good news is that you're not alone. Because I'm nervous too, and this is uncomfortable for me to talk about. Or maybe for some of you, you find yourself on the complete opposite end of the spectrum this morning, and you are excited about what's about to come out of this guy's mouth because you know your fair share of hypocritical people. And so you're ready to hear, all right, let's lay this on thick. Tell me how to deal with those people in my life. And what I'd say to you guys as well is you're not alone in this either, because I'm excited this morning. Because I believe with all of my heart that God has some incredible things to say to us this morning about dealing with difficult people. And specifically, how do we deal with hypocrisy that's all around us and the hypocritical people that constantly infiltrate our life? And so this morning, I'm right there with you. I have those mixed emotions of nerve and excitement, but I want you guys to know that I believe that God's going to reveal some really incredible stuff to us. But before we get there, let's do a little recap. A few weeks ago, we kicked off this series, and if you didn't get a chance to listen to this, I'd encourage you to go back as we kicked off the series and we talked about how do we deal with the overly needy people in our life. And the reality that we talked about was that for a lot of us, when we encounter overly needy people, it begins with giving those people what they need, not what they want, and not constantly removing them from the consequences of their decisions. And then last week, we continued the series with a really, really fun one where we talked about manipulating people And how do we go about breaking the power of manipulation in our lives with those closest to us? And that is, we have to recognize the manipulation that's taking place. And the difficult part is we have to begin to set up boundaries in those relationships. And today, we continue the series by looking at hypocritical people. And for most of you, what I'm willing to bet is when I say that word, a lot of you have someone that comes to mind. You know, it's the person in your life who they always say one thing, but they go and do something different. Maybe they overpromise, but they underdeliver. They're the person who, in front of this group of people, they become one person, but when they switch over here and they walk through the doors of a church, they become someone else. There's someone over here with this group of people, but then when they go home and they're around their wife, they're completely different. You see, it's those people in our lives who are constantly falling short of who they act like they are in public or who they act like they are, what they say they're going to become in front of other people. And for a lot of us, we know those types of people in our life. Maybe for us, you know, we sit here and we look across the church at someone that we think is a hypocritical person every single week. And what I know is this. For most non-Christians in this world, one of their biggest complaints when it comes to the church is this. They utter a phrase something like this. Oh, those Christians, they're just a bunch of hypocrites, right? Isn't that what everybody says about the church? In fact, I was talking with a guy a few weeks ago. And he was talking to me about how he had been trying to invite one of his buddies over and over and over to come check out church here at Corinth. I was so stoked that he was sort of stepping out of his comfort zone and trying to invite someone. But he said this to me. He said, you know, every time that I go and I attempt to invite my buddy to church, he utters a similar phrase to me. And he says this. You know, I would go to church. I would go check it out, but I don't need to be around people who are constantly looking at me, who are constantly judging me for my life. And when they look at me with their eyes, they're telling me how wrong my life is, but I know they're no better than I am. When they leave those four walls, they're no different than I am. And the reality, if we were to simplify that, what he's saying is this. As he looks at the church, he sees a bunch of hypocritical people. And hold on to your seats for just a second. Because what if that wasn't so far from the truth? Now, I don't know if we need to single out the church in that. We certainly could. But what if we just singled out humanity as a whole? Because the reality is that for as many people in our lives that we see are hypocrites, there are probably people in your life who time and time again see you in the same light or can pick out circumstances where you overpromised and underdelivered in your life. And so the reality is that maybe that's not so far from the truth. Maybe all of us have a tendency inside of us to sort of cover up our flaws. And we don't want people to see our shortcomings, right? I mean, nobody, I know I don't. I don't enjoy anybody looking at me and seeing my failures and my flaws, but they're there. And so if people aren't going to see them, what does that force me to do? It forces me to act a different way. It forces me to try to cover that up and stuff that in the closet so that nobody sees that. It forces me to be someone different and say different things around them. And probably for all of us, we have those same emotions and those same feelings rocking on the inside of us. And time again, it leads us to a place that we never intended to go. It causes us to cover things up and to become an actor who acts one way over here and a different way over here. And what you're going to hear me say over and over and over again throughout every week, every series, everything that we talk about here at Core is this. The really incredible thing is that this is not a new problem to you. This is not a new problem to me. This is not a new problem to our world. It's been going on for thousands of years. And why I believe that's so cool, we're going to take just a 1 second sidetrack here. Why I believe that's so cool is because it's not new, and that means what Jesus Christ taught us in this book 2,000 years ago is still relevant today. The same problems that happened back then that he was teaching about and trying to lead people through, he's saying, guess what? You're going through the same stuff today, and I'm still trying to teach you, and I'm still trying to lead you through it. And one of the really incredible things is that throughout the New Testament, we see this word, hypocrites. It comes up again and again and again, and oftentimes we hear it spoken from Jesus' mouth himself. And for a lot of us, what we might know is that the New Testament was written in the Greek language. So all of the New Testament and the original text was written in Greek. And here's just a really short history lesson for you. And so when we go into the New Testament, all of these words that were written in Greek, every time in the New Testament that we see the word hypocrite written, it was always written like this. Check this out. It was always written hypocrites. And what that means is this. It's an actor, a stage player, or one who hides behind a mask. And what we know about Greek culture is that this word was actually derived from Greek stage plays. Right? All over the kingdom, there were all of these different plays that were taking place. And back in ancient Roman times, in Greek plays, what would happen is an actor would not do different facial expressions for different scenes. What they would do is they would have one facial expression on a mask that would be a frowny face and one that would be a smiley face or whatever that looked like. And when they changed scenes and they changed emotions, they would simply put a new mask up over their face. And they would hold it there and go through the scene, and then they would change the mask. And you see, what this word really came to mean was it was someone who was acting like someone but wasn't the real person. And so every time we see Jesus or Paul utter this phrase about hypocrites, he's going back to the Greek actors. And he's saying, you know what? You're being someone who you're not. You're becoming someone with that mask over your face. You're trying to cover up who you really are so that the rest of the world sees you as something different. That's what the original Greek text is saying to us. And as human beings, figuratively or literally, don't we get accustomed to doing this in our lives? Throughout the different circumstances, throughout the different trials that we go through, we have to figure out, okay, which mask today do I pull out of the drawer? What persona am I going to put on today so that the people in this sphere of influence that I have see me for who I want them to see me as? But then when I go over here and I become this person to these people, I need them to see me as something different. And so I need to pull a different mask out of the drawer, and I need to become something different to them. And the really incredible thing, and sometimes this cuts us to the core, is when it comes to hypocrites, this guy named Jesus, he never cut corners. He never took it easy on hypocrites in this world. When it came to dealing with the difficult people and the hypocrites that were, you know, the Jewish religious leaders around him, he never took it easy. He always came straight out and said it. And we get an incredible example of this where he's actually pulling from the Old Testament, from Isaiah, out into what he's saying to the religious leaders that are around him. This morning, we're going to start in the book of Matthew, and we're going to check out what Jesus has to say about hypocrites. We're going to start in chapter 15. And so if you have Bibles with you, that's great. If not, this is an encouragement. Follow along right on the screen with us, or you can crack open your notes page there. But here's what it says in Matthew chapter 15, verses 7 and 8. You hypocrites, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you, for he wrote, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. You see, what Christ is doing here is he's giving us this definition of what it looks like for us as Christians to be hypocrites. He's saying the purest definition of hypocrisy that I can give is this. It's people who talk the talk, but don't walk the walk. It's people who who talk the talk but don't walk the walk. They say one thing with their words, but they're basically saying, forget you, God, with their actions. We've seen it before around us. Maybe for some of us, it's that woman that you know that's constantly saying things like, you know what, we need to pray for her. Because in her private life, she's doing this, and she's doing this, and she's doing this. And so let's pray for her. And in reality, the woman's not concerned about praying for her. She just wants someone to tell all the things that this woman's doing. She just wants someone to gossip to. Or maybe for some of us, it's that guy that we know who goes to church and is a Christian, and he says all of these really religious and holy things, and he acts like his faith is so good, and he's constantly saying all of these things with his mouth, but then he goes home, and with the same mouth, he lambastes his wife. He's constantly screaming and degrading his kids. It's the person who walks in, and they act one way on Sunday, and then they turn around on Monday, and they're constantly going to places in the community, places on the internet, that maybe they shouldn't be going in their lives. God's saying, it's us. When we say one thing, but with our actions, we turn around and do something completely different. Maybe for us, it's that lady that we know that she's constantly posting those pictures of her and her spouse on Facebook, and they always look so lovey-dovey, and they always look like they got everything together, and their marriage is always so perfect on social media. But behind the scenes, things are just a mess. And they don't talk to people. And she likes to stay late at the office to work on the project with that other guy. Or whatever that looks like. We all know people in our lives. We've all seen these hypocritical people. For you, you can probably think of a different circumstance that you've encountered with that difficult person in your life who's walking the line. But the real question is this. It's the basis of this series. Okay, we all know those hypocritical people in our lives. We've all experienced that, but how do we deal with that? How do we begin to love those people in the way that God has called us to love them? How do we care for them in the way that they need to be cared for? How do we speak to them and interact with them in the way that God is calling us to do that? That's the question. And the reality is what we really need to know in these instances, when it comes to difficult people, how do we confront these people in a healthy way? You see, today, that's what's most difficult about this topic of hypocrisy, is that the only way to cure difficult people in our lives is that there has to be some sort of interaction. And a lot of times, what that interaction really turns into is it really turns into something that all of us hate. Confrontation, right? I mean, you'd be lying if you said, oh, I thrive on confrontation. I love that. I love getting in fights with people. Like, I don't care how much of an A personality you are, deep down, confrontation is not fun, is it? But for us, as we look into this world, as we look into the hypocritical or the needy or the manipulating people, what we have to learn to do is we have to learn to look into ourselves and say, okay, what's a healthy way to confront these people? And so today, that's what we're going to do. But before we get into that, and we sort of buzz through that, what I want to do is I want to give you guys a few disclaimers. These are things that aren't in your notes, and so if you want to jot them down, these are freebies. But a lot of times when it comes to healthy confrontation, how do we interact with the hypocrites in our life? There are two extremes that I want to warn you on the front end. Do not go down this path, because this isn't the healthy way. But a lot of times we find ourselves falling into one of these two extremes. The first is, a lot of times, we take the laissez-faire approach. This is the hands-off approach. Like, you know what? It's none of my business to get into anybody else's life. I don't really want to get myself into other Christians' lives. I don't really want to help them. And so, you know what? I'm just going to back off. I'm going to totally stay in the background. And I don't want to have anything to do with my friend's life and telling them what they should or should not do. And so, you know what? I'm just going to completely stay out of it. And I believe that side is one extreme that is not healthy for us. But then there's the other extreme that sometimes we find ourselves falling into, and that's the hyper-confrontational. That's the person who, you know what, I'm going to nitpick everything they do. And when they do something wrong, I'm going to come out and tell them because I'm just an honest person. You can't fault me for being honest, and so I'm just going to come out and say it. And when they do something wrong, even if it's the smallest of things, I'm coming after them. I'm going after that thing because I'm just trying to help. And the truth is this. I want you to catch this. So if you've checked out already, up here. I want you to catch this because this is so incredibly important. There are few things that have caused more harm to the cause of Christ than overly hypocritical, judgmental Christians. Did you catch that? There are few things that have caused more harm to the cause of Christ than overly judgmental, hypocritical Christians. And so if you find yourself in the hyper-confrontational stage, just take it down a notch. Just take it down a notch, because what we want to do is we want to find that healthy middle ground between those two. And I want to offer you one last disclaimer. Because a lot of us are sitting there and maybe we're confused or maybe we're asking this question. So Ben, what do I do in my life when I encounter a non-Christian who's making mistakes, a non-Christian who's not living up to the belief system that I have, a non-Christian who's not acting much like a Christian? Do I need to confront them? Do I need to go after them? And here's what I would say. Absolutely not. No. That's not your place. Why, you're asking? Why do we not confront a non-Christian person? Because the easiest way for us to drive them away from Christ is to hold them to a belief system, to hold them to a moral standard that they haven't agreed to. They've never signed up to be held to a Christian standard. And so it's not our place to confront them. You know what our place is? Our place is simply this. And it's going to sound like little safari material, I know, but sometimes we just need to have the heart of a child. Our role is just to love them towards Christ, and to love them, and to love them, and to love them towards Christ, and to show them that this Jesus Christ person was something different, was a better example than what the church is presently setting for them. That's our role in that. That's our role in the non-Christian's life. And so this morning, if you're sitting there and you're a non-Christian, guess what? This morning, you get to be a part of a family conversation. You get to sit back and sort of relax because we're going to be talking about how we deal with each other in this. And we're going to make it known that our place is not to judge you, is not to force anything upon you. But if we're doing our job right, this church wants to be about loving you well. Not judging you well, loving you well. And so what does that look like for us? Now that we've got the disclaimers off the table, now that we're ready for some meat in there, what does it look like for us to, in a healthy way, confront the Christians in our life that we feel like are teetering on this line of hypocrisies? And I want to ask you this question, because this is fundamental to everything we're going to talk about. This is a question you need to ask yourself as it comes to healthy confrontation. Did I earn the right to confront them? Before we even take a step into healthy confrontation, we have to be willing to ask ourselves that question. Did I earn the right to confront them? And many years ago when I started in ministry, I heard this phrase and it was so foundational. I think it's so foundational to everything the church should be about. But a guy that I really looked up to, he would constantly say this. It is our job in our life to build a bridge that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth. You see, when it comes to people in your life, if you want to speak truth into your life, you have to do the dirty work of building the bridge first. You have to build the trust. You have to build the relationship. You see, this is what God knew. Rules and rights, they never come in before relationship. That's why Jesus Christ came to the earth. Because he knew we needed a relationship with him before this rule stuff, before the right to speak into our life took effect. And the same is true in our interaction with other people. The relationship always has to come first. You have to put change in their pocket before you can even say, okay, I'm in a place now where we can have some confrontation, where we can do this in a healthy way and we can have some back and forth on what it looks like to get these things right. Did I build a bridge that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth? And if so, then what does it look like? Where do I need to seek wisdom in confronting people? And the first thing I would say is this. Our prayer, our thought is this. God, help me confront with the goal of restoration. God, help me confront others with the goal of restoration. We're back to this again. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, it says this, and I feel like this is going to help us out greatly. When it comes to confronting others, here's what Paul's advice is to us. Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by sin, if they find themselves saying one thing but doing another, you who are godly should help me out. Gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path. Does that say sternly? Does that say hastily? Does that say angrily? Does that say in a nasty way? It says, you who are godly, if you truly consider yourself to be godly, doing it for the right reasons, should gently and humbly help that person back onto the right track. You see, in week one, if you were here, we talked about the difference between relief and restoration. That if we want to help people, there's a difference between giving them relief and giving them restoration. You see, the relief approach when it comes to confronting hypocritical people is this. You know what? I'm just going to speak my mind. I'm just going to say it. They're not doing the right thing, and so I just need to go directly to them, and I'm just going to, in whatever form it comes out, I'm just going to let it come out, and I'm going to tell them about it. You see, if our goal is, I just need to get this off my chest, I just need to say it, for me, then save it. Like, don't even bother going there. Because the only thing that that's going to accomplish is this. It's going to completely deteriorate the relationship you have with that person. If that's your only goal, that, you know, I just need to get this off of my chest, that's not going to do anything in the long run. But when we change our mindset and we say, you know what, it's not about immediate relief. It's about long term. It's about me sticking by their side and providing restoration in the midst of them doing something that I don't agree with, them being a hypocrite, them saying one thing and doing another. When it comes to that, I'm in this for the long haul because I want to help them become restored. And here's what it looks like. There's that buddy in your life who's going to come to you and they're going to say, you know what, I've had enough of my marriage. I need a divorce. I need out of this. And your number one thought that's going to come to your mind is this. He's wrong, and let's just write him off. I don't need that relationship in my life. I'm just going to tell him he's wrong, and I'm going to walk away from this thing. That's the relief approach. The restoration approach is this. Every single day, I'm going to remind that guy that I'm fighting for his marriage. Maybe once a week, I'm going to send him scripture. I'm going to text it to him. I'm going to continue to remind him as much as he doesn't want to hear it about his responsibility to his kids. And when the time comes and he looks me in the eye and he says, well, I just can't afford marital counseling, you're going to say, I'll pay for it. Because I want this person to know that I'm fighting for them. I want this person to know that I'm standing beside them, that I'm in this for the long haul, that there's restoration taking place, that I'm not about just a hand out, but I want to provide a hand up in this situation. Maybe for you, it's that lady that you know, that you constantly find her in gossip, and she's a really great Christian lady. She seems to have a really great relationship with Christ, but behind closed doors with a small group of women or when she goes to the barbershop or whatever that looks like, I guess it's not a barbershop for women, it's a salon or something. My bad. When she goes to the salon and she sits down in the chair, it's like everything just comes spewing out. And the relief approaches, you know what? I'm just going to tell her that she's a big gossip. Maybe the restoration approaches this. Maybe instead of saying it in front of a group of ladies, maybe it's just one-on-one behind closed doors. You go to her and you don't say, you know what, you're just a big gossip. You've got a problem in this area. But we take an approach of, you know what, I found myself struggling with that too. And I know you're struggling with it, I'm struggling with it, so is there a way that we could work at this together? Is there a way that we could bring restoration to one another in the midst of our problems with gossiping? And it's not you, but it's now us. That's where the restoration approach comes in. And the really cool thing, I love this, in the book of James, we get this sort of promise that when we focus on restoration in our lives and in our relationships with other people, that there's actually an incredible outcome that comes from that. Check this out. In James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20, it says this. My dear brothers and sisters, if someone among you wanders away from the truth and is brought back, you work at them with restoration in mind. You can be sure that whoever brings the sinner back from wandering will save that person from death and bring about the forgiveness of many sins. You see, when I read this and when I look at these words, when we together work at restoration in confrontation in a healthy way with other Christians, and we come at it from a place of, you know what, I'm just not going to say something to get it off my chest. I'm just not going to take the quick, easy approach, but I'm in this to bring restoration. It gives us a promise there that we improve their future, that we improve our future. And the most incredible part about all of this is when we work at restoration and we begin to restore each other, all of a sudden, people begin to look at the church differently. People begin to look at Christ differently. We set an example that's different than what everybody else in this world thought the church was supposed to look like, thought the church was supposed to act, how the church was all full of hypocrites. And now we begin to set an example for the world that blows their minds. Because we're about restoration. We're about working at this together. We're about getting it right in the long run and not just judging, not just confronting without a relationship, but confronting with the goal of restoration. The second thing is this. God, help me confront with caution. Help me confront with caution. Now, there's this incredible tag on the end of Galatians 6:1 that I left out the first time through. I left out this last sentence, so I want to go back and I want to review that. In 6:1, remember, it said this, "Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path." And then it finishes with this, "And be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself." You see, here at the end, Paul is saying that when you find yourself with other hypocrites in your life, looking for a way to, in a healthy way, confront that person, watch out. Be careful when you go about doing that. Because what Paul knows and what he's trying to warn us about is this. When you find yourself doing that, you are prone to fall into the exact same temptation. You are prone to go down that same path. And not only does Paul give us the warning once, but he gives it to us twice. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12, it says this, "If you think you are standing strong, if you think you've gotten it right in this area, if you think you don't have a problem with hypocrisy in this area, be careful not to fall." Be careful not to fall in to that exact same trap. You see, a lot of times when we confront on this topic, what ends up happening is sort of this pride swells up inside of us. And we begin to believe, you know what, I have the right to speak into their life because I'm better than them. I have the right to speak into their life because I don't struggle in that area. And oftentimes the crazy part is that as we speak truth into that area, as we begin to allow pride to take over inside of us, we find ourselves falling down in the exact same area. A few weeks ago, as you guys know, we got a new staff member here. And in the midst of his first couple days, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about what it looks like around here and work and hours and all of that good stuff that goes with the logistics of a new job. And from the place Brandon was coming from, he was working, you know, 65, 70 hours a week. And so in the midst of those conversations, I sat him down and I told him, you know what, we have a very strict work ethic here that we're striving for, but what I want you to know is this. There's a line. There's a line that I want to make sure that I do not let you cross. And if it comes to cheating something, you need to cheat the church, and we'll figure that out and go home and be with your family. If you find yourself at 50, 52, 54, 56 hours, I'm going to be knocking on your cubicle door. I guess there is no door on the cubicle. I'm going to be knocking on your cubicle and saying, go home. And you see, this was my opportunity to look at him and say, you've been putting in too much hours. You need to go home to your family. And he looked back at me and he said, you know what? I really appreciate that, but I want you to know that I'm going to be doing the same thing to you. And at that moment, I was like, whoa, we're not talking about me here. And he said, I want to know how many times you've cut it off at 50 hours a week in the past several months. I was like, I'm the leader here. That's expected. We don't need to talk about me. I'm talking about your problems. We're not talking about my problems. And you see, as we take these approaches that I just want to help someone, we don't want to look into ourselves. We don't want to see our own problems. We don't want to see where we fall short. But the reality is this, if we're going to get it right, where it always finishes is this. Or maybe I should say where it always starts is this. If we're going to get this healthy confrontation right with other people, it always has to start with this. God, please show me when I'm the hypocrite. God, help me to see when I am the hypocrite. Help me to look inside first. Because guess what? If we don't catch our own shortcomings first, if we don't see where we're flawed first, everything that we're saying to that other person, it loses credibility. We might as well flush it down the toilet because they're saying, look at you, you're a hypocrite too. You're saying one thing to me, but you're going and doing the other with your life. And I love this. You didn't think we were going to talk about hypocrites without getting here, did you? In Matthew chapter 7, the most well-known story of all time about hypocrisy is this. Check this out, starting in verse 3. It says, and why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own? There it is again. Hypocrite. First get rid of the log in your own eye. Then you'll see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. You see, in order for us to have enough wisdom and discernment and clarity, I know those are big words, but in order for us to have those things, we can't do it when our own poor judgment, our own hypocrisy is clouding our judgment, right? I mean, if we think literally into that text, how can you reach into someone else's eye when you can't even see out of your own? That's not a healthy thing. That's not a safe thing to do. You're going to end up gouging their eye out. You're going to end up ruining what your hope was in all of this. And so for us, if we want to begin to cure this in this world, it has to start not with you, not with them, but it has to start with God. Show me where it lies in me. God, show me where I come up short. And what I love about this is there's an incredible story about this very realization in the Old Testament. A guy named King David, who was affectionately called a man after God's own heart, fell into this exact same hole in his life. You see, if we know anything about the story of David, we know that David was at home when everyone else was out at battle. And here he was, the king, okay? It's not like today where the president just gets to sit in the Oval Office and make the calls. Like back then, if you were the king, you were at the front of the lines. You were there on the battlefield. You were leading the men out there to be killed. And so David, as the king of Israel, was supposed to be out on the battlefield. Doesn't this happen to us all too often? When we're someplace we're not supposed to be, we see something we're not supposed to see. And with David, he was someplace he wasn't supposed to be. He saw something he wasn't supposed to have. And when he saw something he wasn't supposed to see, he wanted something he wasn't supposed to want. And as he's on the roof of his palace, he looks across and he sees Bathsheba. And he immediately wants something he's not supposed to have. And he takes her. And he gets her pregnant. And then all of a sudden, this hypocrisy comes in. And it's like, okay, let me try to cover this up. Because I'm not supposed to be that person. And so Bathsheba, being married, he takes her husband. And he says to his generals, put him on the front lines. Because if he dies and then everybody learns that she's pregnant, they'll think that it happened after he died and then I'll be good. I'll be in the clear. We can cover this whole thing up and nobody will think anything different of me. And so he does that. And her husband dies on the front line. And he thinks it's all well and good. But then come knocking on the door is this friend who's built a bridge that's strong enough to bear the weight of truth in David's life. Who's put in the time over and over and day after day and month after month and year after year, named Nathan. And Nathan approaches David and says, I want to have some healthy confrontation with you. Check this out. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 5 to 7. Nathan comes to him just before this and he says, hey, David, I want to tell you a story. So there's this really poor guy. And he's only got one lamb to his credit. And then there's this really rich guy. And he's got lambs, he's got sheep for as far as the eye can see. And someone comes and they need a lamb. But instead of taking his own lamb, he takes from the really poor guy and gives it to them. And so Nathan is telling David this story. And he's saying, David, what do you think about this? What should be done to the rich man? And here's David's response. David was furious. As surely as the Lord lives, he vowed, any man who would do such a thing deserves to die. He must repay four lambs to the poor man for the one he stole and for having no pity. Healthy confrontation. Here we go. Then Nathan said to David, you are that man. You are that man. You see, in the midst of all of that, Nathan was coming before David and saying, I'm enough of a friend of you that I'm asking you to examine your own heart first. That I'm asking you to see the shortcomings that are in you first. And as David changed his mindset, as David began to look at his flaws first, all of a sudden, his heart began to change. His perspective began to change. His mindset began to change. And he says this in Psalm 51. He's crying out to God as he's realized his own hypocrisy. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a loyal spirit within me. Restore me to the joy of your salvation and make me willing to obey you. Create in me a clean heart. And make me willing to obey you. God, allow me to see my own shortcomings first. Because I don't have the right to speak into other difficult people's life until I realize first that I'm pretty difficult myself. That I don't always get it right in this area myself. God, show me where I'm falling short. God, show me where I'm not getting it right. And when we do this, God begins to change our heart. God begins to allow us to set a different example for those around us, for those that we love, for the world around us who needs the church to be a different example, who needs the church to show something different, who needs the church to realize that a lost, hurting, and broken world isn't the only brokenness in this world, that we're plenty broken within these walls too. And every day we want to work at restoring each other. We want to work at getting better at this. We want to work at looking into our own hearts first. You see, that's the key of hypocrisy. It's saying I'm willing to look into myself first before I look into you. And it's willing to say, you know what, I've got some flaws, so why don't we do this together? Why don't we get it right as spouses? Why don't we get it right as friends? Why don't we get it right as a community group? Why don't we get it right as a church, as a whole? And that's when we become a church who sets an incredible example of what it looks like to deal with difficult people. Would you pray with me? God, this morning, this topic is one that's incredibly uncomfortable for us to talk about and think about. Because it requires us to look deep into our own hearts. It requires us to uncover some of our own flaws. And the uncomfortable thought of we fall short in this too. But God, I pray for myself because I so often fall short in this area that I'd be willing to acknowledge my own flaws and my own mistakes and that I don't buy into the lie of the rest of this world that, you know what, it can lift me up by pushing someone else down. It can make me look better if I make someone else look worse. It can make me feel better about myself if I talk about how terrible they are and how many areas of their life they're getting it wrong. God, may we be a group of people that's not about pointing the finger first. May we realize that when we point the finger, there are three pointing right back at us. God, this morning, may we be willing in our relationships to not just come out in front to confront people, to not take a hands-off approach, but to spend day after day building healthy relationships that are strong enough to bear the weight of truth amongst each other. God, this morning, above all else, may we acknowledge that you are a God who, in the midst of our flaws, offers amazing grace. It's in your name I pray. Amen.